Hey folks, Tyler from Being This Person here. This is a very special episode to me. I got to sit down with Joyce, who has known me my entire life, knew me in utero, in fact, and who has been an incredible inspiration to me, especially as far as my art goes, reminding me that I can be an artist and I can create and that it does matter and it does make a difference. And she's just a beautiful soul, and I hadn't seen her in a long time, and she happened to be visiting, and I was able to get her to sit down and talk to me, and I really, really felt the love that I remembered when I last saw her, and it was so very, very special. I'm sure you'll pick some of that up in the conversation. It is one of the more subdued as far as noise and such, partially due to the fact that we were in a hotel. But I'm sure you'll enjoy it. I would, at that point, hope that you would subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever email or whatever podcast feed you get us through, and tell a friend. Those are all three ways that you can get the word out and support the show. Telling a friend, I would encourage not just about this podcast, but about other podcasts as well. I think that there's a wealth of information and ways for us to connect with our fellow humans out there. It's pretty easily accessible. So help other people get into it too. I do have an email. It is beingthisperson@gmail.com. It's all lowercase letters, no spaces, all spelled correctly. There's also a Facebook for Being This Person, pretty easily found, and I have a Twitter. Twitter is under my personal name, but is used mainly for promotion of the show. You get a few other things in there occasionally. Twitter is as Twitter does, but it is at Donis Tyler, so DONESTYLER. You should be able to find me pretty easily. Again, mostly show promotion, but a little bit other stuff occasionally. I also now have a Patreon for the show. I do want to thank the supporters I have out there already, but it is the way that you can financially support the show. Patreon, if you don't know, is a platform where you can subscribe to give money to creators, not just podcasters like me, but all kinds of artisans are out there. And at this point, for a monthly subscription of $1 a month, I'll send you a handwritten thank you note. And then there's some other tiers of extra content. Well, not extra content so much, but extra stuff. You'll see if you go there. Patreon.com/beingthisperson. Do go in through that route. It is apparently a little bit difficult to find from the front end. I always go because I have a link to it because it's bookmarked, but you might have to go in, use that ruined, or go that patreon.com/beingthisperson route, and you should be able to get there pretty easily. Thank you, folks, for listening. I really appreciate you. Let's roll the theme music. Who are you?
I'm Joyce Sunnington, or Joyce Sunnington Stanek, or Joyce Stanek, or just Joyce. And to one person, Joy.
Well, one person and her kids.
Yes.
Did you use Joy more frequently
never.
When you were younger? No, she just decided.
I
to take
never
it
used Joy.
Huh?
But she wanted it to be Joyce, so. Yeah.
I never knew that. I've known you my entire life, but
I don't respond to that when people say that, yeah. So.
It makes it convenient. Mm-hmm. You wander around places and know if somebody's actually speaking to you.
Yeah.
So what else? When you're...
About who I am?
Yeah.
I'm old. But I used to be young. I still remember. I'm an artist. I guess that's my primary identity and a spiritual being. And tying the two together, that's who I am.
That's definitely, it shows in my memories of you and the work of yours that I know, that you definitely tie your spirit to your art in a way that I don't see out of everyone else.
I never was able to just paint realistically or abstractly. I always saw something different in the work and had to make some part of it other dimensional in a way. I mean, I used to think it was surrealism, but it isn't really surrealism. It's kind of hyper-realism, maybe. Because all this is out there. I see life as being a number of different levels of consciousness that are all going on at once, because I don't really believe in time, except as an abstract way of negotiating what we're all doing.
Allowing us humans to
function, yeah. Anyway, I frequently see things in another dimension. At the same time, I'm seeing it on this dimension. But they get mingled up in my mind's eye. And so I put those elements together on the canvas a lot of times. Other times, I'm just trying to express things that I feel when I'm in a higher consciousness mode.
Do you direct yourself, as in maybe through meditation, to see what you're seeing, or are they frequently dreams, or what?
Mostly through meditation. I would meditate, and then they just come sometimes. And when they come, it's free. It's just right there, and very powerful. And frequently, I can't get rid of that image or images until I paint them. I have to put them down for other people to see them too. And I quite often don't understand what the image is actually saying or representing while I'm doing it. It's something I'll learn during the process or even after. Then I'll say, oh. I mean, that was my process early on, at least. In the last 10 or 15 years, when I receive an image, I'll quite often get the title of the painting along with the image. And it won't necessarily make sense to me, but I'll hold on to that. And
so does it come around while you're in the process, why the title came to you at the time of the image?
As I'm working on it, yeah.
I can identify in my own art, it's getting an energy or something that's in me out of me. It sounds not unlike what you have, where the image just resides there until I put it somewhere else. And that's my job, is to do that translation.
Yeah. And until you do, it haunts you.
Yeah.
It won't let you go.
Yeah. And then you're 100 hours in.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the really good ones. I like that. And I don't know. Very early on, when our daughter was about 2 or 3, was when I started painting for real and trying to actually produce more. Prior to that, I had been working full-time, so painting was something I just did on the weekends or on a vacation or whatever. I wasn't really able to focus that much on it. But after that point, when we had our own business and I could actually paint there if I wanted to, it freed me up to focus on it more and more. And I started having a lot of dreams and visions of these things. I didn't have any idea what it was about. But I even did a self-portrait of myself that was very strange. And I mean, it's not strange now, years later, but at the time it was very strange. I don't know. It's maybe a good example. When we lived in Denver, I went to a playground, and it was during a family reunion, I think, and there were a whole bunch of people climbing this large geodesic dome thing that was in the playground. It was quite cool. I took a few pictures of it. I didn't think much of it, but that image kept at me for years. And then when I finally painted it, I painted it in space, and there was a light source in the middle of the geodesic dome, and all the people that were climbing the dome were trying to get into the light piece that was in the center. And it wasn't just one light piece, because it was all pointillistic. But inside the heads of all the figures was a miniature of that light piece. And it just seemed to me to represent how we all think we have to go outside of ourselves to find what's lacking. We don't recognize that which we strive for is already in us. And I called it the playground, because it's kind of what we're doing here in life.
I absolutely agree that in two aspects, in the way you just described that, the we all come from something and have a piece of that in us, mm-hmm. and part of our job as being humans, especially if you're spiritually directed at all, is to share that with other people and help them find it. So that's the one way that I agree with you. The other way I agree with you is that, and as with many people, I think I may have learned this a little too late in life. I wish enlightenment came easier at a younger age, but it just doesn't.
Yeah.
But looking interior, looking internal, looking into yourself to find the things that you're looking for, and to realize that maybe there isn't a hole that needs to be filled so much as something you're missing about yourself that will fill that, that hole or that space.
Yeah.
And like I said, I really wish I'd come across that younger, because it feels hard doing it when you're older.
Well, for me, it helped. I wrote a mission statement right about the time I started really painting. And I said that my intention was that my artwork would create a sense of wellness and well-being and peace and harmony to people who saw it. That was what I wanted, people to receive something from my work that would help them. And when I wrote that down. I just wrote it on a scrap of paper and tacked it up above the desk. And I didn't think about it. But once you write that down, it's there. And it directs you. And I think the fact that it is directing it less from ourself, like doing it for ourselves, for doing it for others, that opens all kinds of doors. I'm not articulate on this, but I know it's true. It's the wanting to give the love that creates the love. And yeah, that's what I wanted people to get from my paintings, was the love. I'm getting lost.
It's quite all right.
I don't know.
I think there's a common misconception societally about love, in that it's so frequently it seems that it's caged, or people try and control and keep mm-hmm. it in, and it seems to smother that emotion or that sensation and that connection. Whereas the handful of people out there that look at it more broad-based and open, and love is open source. It's shared. It's augmented and worked on and changed by everyone, whether they realize they're doing it or not. And once you can open to that, mm-hmm. I think it becomes much more real, and you get more of it. It seems like more shows up.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
It's you're not wanting it any longer. Sometimes overwhelming in my world. Like, oh my goodness, this is a little difficult right now. This is so much.
Yeah.
I wonder where that came from in us as humans, where we started to think that we needed to cage it off, because I don't think we've always been that way. I think that may be a modern conception.
I don't know. I had never thought about whether it was innate or not.
Humans being an animal, if I compare them to any other animal that I see, watch, or know, they don't seem to have the same way of wanting to cage or control all of it. They just do. And I expect that humans were that way initially. And somewhere along the line,
children are.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Children are just open and free.
We teach them to be fearful. And that love and fear can't live together. So.
Well, and fear and understanding are one of my largest juxtapositions. Mm-hmm. If you're afraid of something, it's frequently because you just don't have any understanding of it. And if you can learn a little bit about it, then you grow and your fear of it goes away. And that's displayed by any minority group that's looked at. People are fearful of it because they don't understand. But if they start to look at it and learn about it, fear goes away. So does the anger and all the ugly gray black muck in the world. Starts to go away a little bit. We can see a little bit more light and shine toward each other. It's tough. As you mentioned, it's hard to articulate things like this.
It is. I tend to go off track and around in circles. Ask me another question.
Well, we have been leading into the next question a little bit. They are built that way. The next question is why? Why are you who you are? And so we started touching on that already. But do you remember?
Wow. You mean, why am I an artist?
Why are you? Yeah, however you want to answer the question. But
I'm an artist because I got polio and I couldn't dance anymore. And that was where I channeled the energy. So that's easy. Why I paint from a spirit-based perspective. That was a gradual thing. Well, it was always there, but not recognized. And just because I have a need to share that. I had a near-death experience when I was young, and I never told anyone at that point. So when I got older, then I decided I needed to show what I'd gotten from that. I mean, it makes you view everything differently. And I don't know. That's two different things. But the being an artist, I think dancing and painting are very similar. If you look at dancing, it's a visual art. It's just so much the same. You can't make the move unless you can see it in your head, the way an artist sees their painting. So that seemed like a perfect step.
And I would throw music into that mix, too.
Yeah, but I couldn't play music. I wanted to. But I only have one hand that works, so... Yeah, that just...
Using your resources.
Yeah.
But myself... Growing up a lot as a musician, and I'm not a musician in so much, but I still have instruments, I still play them,
yeah.
I still make music. It is a lot. I can't perform the act unless I can visualize it or grab hold of it, much like you explained. You can't paint it unless you see it. You can't make a dance move unless you've gone through the motions already in your head. I think music is much the same way, and I kind of expect a lot of arts are that way. I can't speak to that from experience, but I can speak to it from my experience. We've now come full circle back to the it's something in you that you have to get out in some way. And those are effective and things that other people can find joy and love and affect from. Do you remember a time when because you said the spiritual painting was always there, but not fully realized. Do you remember a moment or a time that brought that focus into you, where you got to grasp the spiritual side of it, or was it just a gradual grew on you?
I'm trying to remember. I would have to say it was probably when we were in Tucson. Our daughter was young, and I decided I was going to do a series of all these paintings. And I had been studying about color therapy and just other New Agey stuff. And I did a series of paintings, and it was just undeniable that that's where it was coming from. But it was also undeniable that no one had a clue what I was doing. And some people were frightened of it because I had a show.
It's good to scare them once in a while.
Well, they were big paintings, too, which always makes it a little more frightening. I remember lining all these paintings up and watching these crowds of people, because it was at a mall. walking by and hiding their head.
Really?
I put one of my paintings up in our small frame shop, and I remember people not being able to look. It was just too personal. It was too much. And those paintings don't get that kind of reaction anymore. But at that time they did, because nobody was ready for them. They didn't understand it, and they didn't feel it. It was just too scary. Like you say, the fear of something you don't understand. But there was an artist. Gosh, I can't remember what nationality she is. Her last name is Klimt. And she did a large number of metaphysical paintings back many, many, many years ago, and knew no one would understand them, and made everyone promise not to show them to the world until 20 years after she died.
Wow.
And she not so long ago had a beautiful exhibition at the Guggenheim. And she'd even dreamt that she would have her paintings, you know, some sort of a place that was spiral.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing. And I really identify with what she's put down, with a lot of her images, the symbols that we use. Some geometrics, but I tend not to go there very often. But for her, she had to get it out.
And then the not releasing it until after you've passed is
very
curious.
She knew that no one was ready yet. And when I did those paintings back in the 80s, I knew nobody would understand them. You know. So I hid them away mostly.
It's a hard one for me to swallow, because I get a sense of elation when I can make something that strikes people so much that they don't know how to work with it. It makes me excited. It makes me feel like I'm on the right track. I can't imagine tucking it away for forever.
Well, no one wanted to see it. They wanted to be comfortable in that. I mean, I was not a name. Nobody in New York was going to find me. And besides that, I don't think the caliber of my painting and my techniques were not as good then. So I wasn't the right caliber to go into a big cosmopolitan city, which is about the only place that likes to deal with the avant-garde like that. So
that's... You got to be comfortable with being a little taken aback to live in a place like New York City to begin with.
Yeah.
So you're gonna be more okay with digesting rougher content or more difficult content.
Yeah, that's not me. I've doubled back again.
Do you feel that you're more capable of expressing what your technique has developed? Or do you feel that the technique now hides some of the emotion? Do you feel they're in balance, or do you...
My technique and what?
I find that when I'm doing... Now, I've never gotten along with a paintbrush, but I get along just fine with pastels and things of that nature.
Okay.
So other visual mediums. I find that I struggle to convey my message because my technique is not developed, partially because I haven't devoted time to it.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, it took a long time. It took a long time of working on my technique to get so I could come close to replicating what I saw in my head. That's really hard to do. I mean, you can't have to be able to not think about your technique at all at that point. So, and I've only really accomplished it a few times to where the painting came out just like I saw it.
But that's got to feel amazing.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to feel just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, those times are wonderful. But, yeah, I'm still working on that. Mm-hmm.
And when you create something from your mind's eye, it, like you said, it's incredibly difficult, but there's detail and depth in your mind that I don't know you can ever fully get out in a physical medium, because
no.
Your emotion and your thoughts are tied up in there too. And you can certainly express that, like you said, through symbolism and things of that nature. But I don't know if you can ever fully do it. And even so, the viewer's space from where they're looking at it is going to elicit the reaction that they have space for, or they have a place to have the reaction. And so it's going to mean something different to them anyway.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile that? Like the fact that maybe they don't see the same thing you do in it?
Well, they're never going to see exactly in it what I saw in it. I mean, I'm happy if I can replicate what I saw for myself. And whenever I've been able to do that, then I can't say exactly what they get from it. But it's powerful, much more powerful. So, there's some paintings that I've done that I was very dissatisfied with that other people got a lot from.
That's always a curious one, too.
Yeah.
When I make something like, I really missed the mark on that one. Somebody else will absolutely fall in love.
Yeah, they just come in and, oh, I want that. So.
Again, a good feeling,
yeah.
But it's an awkward one. Like, I'm glad you love it. I'm kind of happy to see it go. Staring has been driving me crazy.
Yeah.
So the next question is, what makes you unique?
I don't know if I am unique. I mean, well, we're all somewhat unique. I'm not sure what direction you want to go.
You're in charge. You're in charge. Your direction.
I mean, some of my uniqueness would be physical. Because painting from a wheelchair has a lot of limitations. And, well, some. I mean, I'm unique as a spiritual being. and yet I'm just part of the whole soup.
Primordial soup, as it were.
Yeah.
One of my favorite words.
I've always seen our existence as soup. I don't know.
It's totally okay to not know. I mean, it's not something that
I hadn't thought
about.
Of.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I don't ever want to copy anyone. That's a biggie for me. I would never want to try to take from somebody else's vision. But that said, I'm sure there are people who have done things very similar to mine. I just don't know them.
That does make you unique, at least within your living pool, in that you don't know them. And there are definitely other people that are communicating their spirituality through a visual medium of some sort. And but within your world, you're one of the fewer of that group.
Oh yeah,
and that kind of makes you unique.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I can't judge what my work does for other people, but I do know that I can touch other people. I mean, because I get contacts from people all over the world who've seen my work and want more, and that just blows my mind.
Little old me.
Yeah, that something I've done has touched someone like that. Yeah, it makes you feel good.
And that's not something everybody gets to do.
No. Yet it just feels so normal. It that's the way it feels. If I think about it, it's really special. But most of the time I just go, oh, yeah.
Breathe through it and do it.
Yeah. Just being grateful.
I think that adds the potency to action as well. And all actions, not just artistic action. When you are able to... A term I've heard used a bit lately is the flow state, where you flow through it. You just do it. Again, you're not paying attention to your technique or the rigor around you. You're just going through and making the actions. And I think it does make a more potent action and more meaning. But attaining that point of Zen where you can do that is difficult.
Yeah.
Unless you live in it all the time.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah. But who can all the time? You gotta have hiccups and stops.
Yeah. Well, the world's a beautiful place. I know that. I'm glad that art's been a medium for me to connect with others in a good way. I was going to do hypnotherapy for a while.
As a profession or
yeah.
as a subject?
No, I've done it as a subject.
Okay.
But no, this is as a profession in order to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do it because my hearing wasn't good enough and my voice wasn't good enough. I found that you really need to have extremely good hearing and really strong, soothing voice, a certain kind of voice. It's really conducive. So I gave up on that. But I thought maybe my painting could be a substitute.
Different avenue.
Yeah. I mean, because I worked in social services and I still wanted to be some sort of a helper.
So I only vaguely remember you being anything other than an artist. I think that's the way I've always looked at you. So you worked in social services?
I worked in social services. I spent years doing intake work for social services in Denver. And then from there I went to the county attorney's office. And I was part of the Department of Child Support. And I interviewed people about for paternity suits and support actions.
Wow.
Just helping recipients of almost all recipients of public assistance. So I did that for years. I loved the interviewing. I loved that so much. I loved doing intake. But I got promoted, you know.
Mm.
I kept getting promoted to jobs that I liked less and less. And then when I got pregnant, they didn't really think that I'd be able to go full term. Nobody did. So when I was having a lot of pain at 7 months, I quit my job, went on maternity leave, which was 3 months. And
that's not enough months on the other side.
No, not enough, because I went full term. So I couldn't go back to work when the time was up. And they canceled. They essentially let me go. And I was really beside myself. But I was also so happy, because I wanted to spend time with my baby. I didn't want to go back and leave her. So that was a turning point. So I had to find some other way to help. But I spent several years just being mom. And then when she got old enough to start going to daycare sometimes, I started painting again. And that was when I took stock of what exactly I wanted to do with my art. So I mean, it's such a progression of things in my life. I guess a lot stemmed from having my daughter.
Yeah. It's a common thread I find amongst parents, that it's a game changer. I know that having my son changed my life.
Well, yeah.
There is every probability with the path that I was on that I wouldn't be sitting here in front of you.
Mm.
I would have ended up in some horrible, terrible decision-making place that would have prevented me.
Mm.
And having the opportunity to look at my life and make decisions based on the fact that I now am here for this other being, this other human, and how am I going to serve that correctly? It altered me forever. I'm eternally grateful.
Yeah.
As a parent for that, and I find that in a number of people. You don't necessarily have to be running down the freight train to death path than I was, but you do have a child, and it does change your focus a lot if you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure everyone is doing it correctly.
I know.
So did you stop painting entirely for those couple of years? Or did you still keep it as a weekend kind of?
No, when she was little, no. I meditated. I still meditated, but I wasn't doing anything more than a few sketches here and there. I wasn't painting.
You think maybe you were building up things? Like
probably.
Bringing the pot to a boil?
The cycles I go through. And I think that was a cycle to pull back from it and then get ready for the next phase. So.
And you frequently, artists are defined by this is this period of work and this is this period of work. Do you find those cycles create the period of work? Or has it been a gradual progression that's growing to where you are?
Both. I mean, I went through a period of work in the beginning there where I was just trying to paint what people wanted, what I thought would sell out of our shop. So I was doing all these watercolors of cactus and flowers. And
yeah. Who wants to be Thomas
and
Kincaid?
It just wasn't there. I mean, I sold a bunch of pieces, but they don't say anything at all. Because they weren't meant to. That wasn't what people wanted. Just decorative.
Innocuous. Hotel art is what I call
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really wanted to do figures. And that took me a while to get good at.
It's incredible how difficult it is to represent the human body. Like we
to
live
do it.
In one. You would think it would be easier, but it's incredibly difficult.
It's because from a young age we're taught this mark here represents the ear, and this mark here, all you have to do is to go doot doot, and that's a nose, and two dots, those are eyes. And, you know, we have this built-in blueprint that's been hammered into us as kids when we're taught this is how you represent a house. This is how you represent a tree. This is how you represent your mother or your father. And so, if something doesn't if a child doesn't come in touch with some real artistic training by the time they're like 10, it's kind of really hard to come back from that. You're just painting symbols. And the human form is so much more complicated. I mean, we make it more complicated. It's not more complicated. But we ask more of an artist doing a human figure than we do of an artist doing a tree. We don't say that tree has to be exactly like
the
model.
One you're looking at.
Right? And it doesn't have to say this or say that. But when you're doing the human form, well, it's kind of like the way people say all the people of a race that they're not used to being around, they all look alike, they can't tell them apart. Well, it's the same way with trees or trucks or cactus or whatever. I mean, all those things have the same individuality that a human being does, but we're not used to looking for it, so we can represent it without getting into the nitty-gritty. But when we're doing a person, a human form, we're so invested in the nuances that make that person look a certain way or feel a certain way. It's just a lot harder. We demand that we do it better.
Because we have the connection to what we expect.
Right.
A saguaro cactus is, you know, a cucumber-shaped cylinder with two arms.
Yeah.
But a human, you're right. We because we wander through the world identifying each other by the nuances of our appearance and our behaviors. And there's something I heard that you can, your walk, your gait, the way you move is as distinctive as a fingerprint and as unique to individuals. When I heard that, I started seeing it, and I can recognize a person that I know sometimes just by the way they're moving when they're
exactly.
sitting at a table or something.
It's unconscious, but we record all of that. Yeah. It doesn't even have to be somebody you really know well. Just somebody you've met a couple of times or seen pictures of. And all of a sudden they'll be walking down the street and you can't really see them, but you know it's them.
You know who it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that needs to be conveyed through, or we expect that out of somebody making human form.
Oh, yeah.
It's curious. I have another artist friend who, actually, the picture in my bio on my website was done by him, and now he's in my living room. And watching him work through, well, because I sat probably for 40 hours or so for him to do this oil painting of me. And it's a stunning piece. And he was like, okay, I think we're pretty much done. I'm just going to do some finishing touches. And I had had my hand resting on a cane. Or something. I can't remember what it was. But he was thinking a cane, and he called me, and he says, I need to ask, but I think I need to change this. I was like, okay, what? He says, well, I think your hand is actually sitting on a dynamite detonator. You know, the old plunger-style detonators.
Oh, my God.
I was like, really? He goes, yeah. I was like, do it. Let's do that. That sounds amazing. And he changed it, and
wow.
Like, watching him look at the painting before he made that change, and watching him look at the painting after he made that change, totally different worlds.
Yeah.
He knew that it was where it was supposed to go. It was very curious. But it is that looking at that person and finding that character in them.
Yeah.
That is difficult to learn. And probably, as with anything great, impossible to master.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you've gone through the same thing. And so do you don't use models, to my knowledge, a lot for your paintings, or do you?
Yeah, I do.
You do use models?
Yeah, after I decide what I want, then I try to get a model to come in. And I just use a photograph, usually. Photograph of them.
They still hold better that way.
True. And people don't want to hang around. And I don't really have a good space to have them sitting there for 12 hours or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I sat in my friend's garage over a number of sessions.
Yeah.
Like that's where he was able to paint, was in his garage.
Well, you get a better likeness if you do it from life.
Yep. It was fun trying to remember, this is the shirt I have to wear every time I go over.
Yeah.
Like, this shirt. And I remember one day I was like, I couldn't find it. It must be in the laundry. He's like, it's okay, we'll work on a different part. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I'm really trying. Dressing exactly the same for weeks, because we met, you know, roughly once a week for a number of weeks. Interesting. And he can't paint from a photograph very well. He really struggles to get that depth. The light is where he focuses a lot of it. He's really intent on the light, and he just doesn't, it doesn't show to him in a photograph.
Well, it doesn't nearly as well. No. You can get a lot more from life.
Yeah. That's a good all-around statement. You can get a lot more from life. Like, just being in life. So, the next question, which we've kind of bumped into, again, it happens very often, is, will you tell me about a defining moment? We've already bumped past a few. We talked about becoming a parent and making the decision to be a professional artist as opposed to anything else. But is there a defining moment that strikes you in your life?
So many. I guess it's this time when I was trying to meditate a lot and painting a lot, and we had a customer come in who was had been a monk. Well, he was still a monk, and he came in with some pieces to be framed. He got to talking to us, and he knew that I meditated a lot, and he asked if I used a mantra, and I said, no, I never had. And he says, try the words I am. And so I said, okay. He says, and you also have to take and make a blue disc, sky blue, and just pin it to the back door back there. And look at that the whole time you're meditating. And anything that comes into your mind, any thought, feeling, say, I am. I am. I am. So I found a quiet time. I went back and I did this. And with my eyes open the whole time, I just started, I was able to see through the door into the alley. And then into the neighborhood behind it, and then into the mountains, and beyond, and beyond, and beyond. And the whole time, I just kept saying, I am, I am, and I was. It was like a realization that I am everything, because there is no separation. There's no other. Our whole society is built on defining those demarcations. So this is good and this is bad and this is you and this is me and this is happy and this is sad. But it's all one thing. And I was in such a state of bliss that I couldn't speak. All I could do was smile and giggle. And I went running into my husband, and he knew instantly what was going on. So he didn't press me to talk or anything. But then a customer came in.
Shaken back to reality.
A little bit. I went racing out to the front to greet the customer like I always do. And I looked up and I started grinning. And he just said, whoa, somebody's having a good day. And he started laughing and left.
Well, it left?
He left. He was like, he didn't even hang around.
That's awesome.
I know. It's like he got what he came for. And so I've spent every day since then trying to go back to that place. Because it's so sad when it shuts back down. And yeah, but there has to be, I don't know, in order to reach that sort of thing in try to stay there. You have to devote yourself completely to that. That was his message to me, is that I shouldn't do that because I had a husband and a daughter.
That's why they make monks in monasteries and things of that nature, so somebody can pursue that.
I know, but I wanted to too.
Yeah, the things you have to give up, though, are rough. I hold to those little sparks myself, those moments of profound clarity that that have come upon me for whatever reason, and visit them. But because I have a son and because I have other obligations in my world, I also try and remind myself I can't stay there, unfortunately, as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
And as wonderful a place as that is, I have to. Maybe I don't have to. Maybe it's me telling me I have to do something else. Me laying my own obligations on myself. But nobody's going to pay my mortgage if I just stay in Zen state all the time.
Well, true. Yeah, you can't really communicate with others at that point on a regular level.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite work.
Well, and once you hit there, even when you come back, I don't think you communicate with others the same way you did before you had that experience.
No, it definitely changed me. I mean, I can't say exactly how, but yeah.
I love it. It's a great story. The surprise ending was the best. Did he ever come back for anything else, like days later?
Well, I don't think so. I'd never seen him before. He was a young guy. He just, I don't know what he was coming in for, but
apparently to watch you smile and giggle.
I guess. I couldn't really say much. Yeah, it was good. But defining moments. I guess getting married to my husband. That was a defining moment. Connecting with a person who's so true. And describe it other than coming home. These people, you just being with them is coming home. So
lucky that, people get to find that somewhere.
Yeah, how lucky can I be? Yeah.
So the last question. You've made it all the way. Almost anyhow, on the finish line. The last question is, what makes you similar to other people?
I want love. I want to love. I want to receive it and give it. And
I wish more people saw that in themselves. Walking through life and looking at people, it doesn't seem like everyone has been taught that that's the goal, is to give and receive love and to exchange that. I don't know what to do about it. It upsets me sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. It's just so much easier. Just. But I agree. I think that is tantamount in our human connection. Is to have love.
Mm-hmm.
That's very. I think that's an excellent place to go.
I can't say it more than that.
I think that's beautifully said. Often the simplest ways are the best and most pure. So, thank you for sitting down with me.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
I hope you can edit around all of
I don't edit. I let it be.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, people are what they are. I'll turn it off and I'll tell you a little bit more.